Okay, so today is the 5th of October, 2018, the 26th of Chesh of Tishrei, Tavshin Ayin Tes, and we have Pelacha Day, Perek B/Gimel, 2 and 3 of the Book of Amidbar. It wasn't the easiest thing figuring out a halacha day, especially because of Perek Aleph we already talked about using a census. But we'll take one look at a Rashi. Rashi appears at the very beginning of chapter 3. In Perek Gimel Pasuk Aleph, it tells us Ve'ela to those Aaron and Moshe. These are the descendants of Aaron and Moshe. Biyom Diber Hashem Moshe Bar Sinai. In the day that Hashem spoke to Moshe at Har Sinai. So Rashi makes the comment. Right, Ve'enu Masker El Bnei Aaron. That these are descendants of Aaron and Moshe. Then we only mention the children of Aaron. So that's a little bit odd. So Rashi continues on and says, Lefi Shalomdan Nikru. But yet they're called descendants of Moshe. Why? Because Moshe taught them Torah. Melamed to teach us. Shekol Melamed as ben chaveru Torah. Ma'ala alav akasav ki ilu yaldo. That somebody who teaches the son of his friend the Torah, we consider it as if he birthed him. In the words of the Gemara. So that's an interesting idea, right? So where does that? Is there any other source? So we do have a couple. So the Torah Tamima. Hey, that is an explicit Gemara. The Gemara tells us, "Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Kol Laminis Ben Minot Torah, Malav Kasuk Yilu Yaldo." But he teaches the son of his friend Torah as if he birthed him. Shav Eil to those Aaron Moshe, V'samich Levi Eilish Moshe Ben Aaron. Lomer Lacha Aaron Yalad Moshe Limi to teach that Aaron gave birth to them and Moshe taught them. Lefichah Nikru Al Shema. Therefore, they are referred to as Moshe's children. So, is there any other indication here of a Talmud referring to his Rebbe as Avi? So the Torah Tamim says, "Yes." That if one looks in Malachim Beis, so in Malachim Beis we have the story of Elisha and Eliyahu, where Eliyahu goes off in the chariot to heaven. So what does Elisha say? So Elisha says, Avi, Avi, that Elisha calls out to him, my father, you're leaving. So Eliyahu was not Elisha's father, but Elisha was the teacher of Elisha, and therefore he is justified in referring to him as Abba. If anybody wants to, this happens to be the Hesped, Rabbi Norman Lamb gave a Hesped for Rav Soloveitchik at his Shloshim. Rav Soloveitchik died on a Pesach, and the funeral was it was very quickly put together. It was up in Boston. I was actually present for that as a little seventh grader. I was brought up that I was in Massachusetts for Pesach at the time, and my uncle, who was a Talmud of the Rav, brought me that, which is a day that I won't forget. But 30 days later, there was a Shloshim at YU where Rabbi Lamb spoke about his relationship with Rav Soloveitchik, and he phrased it in the description of Eliyahu leaving Elisha. That Elisha was a Talmud, Eliyahu was the Rebbe, and he like described, if I would have an opportunity with him, what would I do? So I look here for this example, and the pasuk describes that they were walking together. Why were they walking together? Because Elisha was too ashamed to be able to face Eliyahu, and therefore they walked side by side rather than see him face to face. And there's a whole description that was later written up in Tradition magazine. It's a very beautiful description of a Rebbe Talmud relationship. But the Torah Tamima continues on and says, but why? Why is that? Why do we refer? What is that connection? The father son relationship. Why do we line that up with a Rav Talmud relationship? And do we see another? Do we see a makor for that lining up? So he points to Psukim in this week's Parsha, that the Psukim tell us in the beginning, not the beginning of Parsha Bereishis, but the beginning of Sefer Bereishis, in the description of the descendants. That when Perek Dalet begins, so after the stories of. Adam, Chava, Cain, and Hevel. So it starts going through the description of descendants. And right off the back, in Perek Dalet, Pasuk Yud Tes, the beginning of Chamishi, there's a Ve'ikach lo Lemech, Shtei Nashim. Lemech took two wives, Shema Achaz Adah, V'Shema Shinis Tzila. Those are the name of two of them. But Teled Adah Es Yaval, Hu Haya Avi Yoshev Oel Umikne. Right, so he gave birth. He was the father of of who dwells in tents and breeds cattle, etc. Right? But the word Av is referred to as he's the one who figured this out. Why is he the Av? Was he then taught it to subsequent generations? Similarly, the other person, the name of the other brother was Yuval, v'shem Avatelet Adas Yaval, who aya Avi Yoshev Oel Humikna, that he was the one who would handle a harp and a... Yoshev Oel Mikna is the previous one. He was the one who would dwell in tents and breed cattle. And then Yaval is the one who would handle a harp and a flute. Tofes Kinor V'ugav, he was the father of the harp and the flute, maybe the father of artistry, things like that. So you see the term Av is used as the one who teaches these trades and these ideals or these skills to the world. Right? The one who discovers an area of wisdom, he's considered the father of it. Because he's the one who birthed it. So therefore we see that relationship as well about... learning other things. He continues on and says, okay, well, Moshe Rabbeinu was not just the Rebbe of Aaron's children, Moshe was the Rebbe of all of Klal Yisrael. Why is it only mentioned in that way? So he says, well, it must be that he taught the children of Aaron more than the rest of, than everyone else. He doesn't bring a source for that, but is an interesting Hara nonetheless. And then he says one more idea, he points out, and then Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us, Amar Reish Lakish Kol Malamid Es Ben Chavero, Torah Malav Akasuv Kilu Aso. Not just that he's his father, but anybody who teaches his son, the son of his friend, Torah. And by the way, it's interesting that it keeps referred to as the son of one's friend. Really? Right? Why didn't he say anyone who teaches someone else's Torah? So what is the significance of that phrase? I don't know. I'm just pointing out the nature of it. Each time it's referred to in that way, the son of one's friend. Ben Chavero. The son of one's friend.
No, that's very interesting.
Yeah, I thought so too.
No, I'm thinking about mentoring and the whole concept. Mentoring is like you're taking over a position of that your friend.
Okay.
You're extending.
Okay. So the Torah describes it as he made it. Shneamar is hanefesh asher asu b'charan. What is that pasuk said about? It's hanefesh asher asu b'charan. So that is in the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha when it describes that Avraham Avinu went to Eretz Canaan, and he went with the nefesh asher asu b'charan, which with the people that he made in Charan. So what is that? Asay, what is the idea of Asiya? And he explains that Reish Lakish is having the idea that anybody who teaches something is if he made them. Another idea from this, as Rashi explains in the pasuk of on the day that Hashem made the heavens and the earth. Take a look. What does he say there? So comes Rashi and says, I'm not sure what he's referring to there. But okay, so the idea of, so the Gemara there, the Marasha on that Gemara in Sanhedrin, take a look over there, so where's Sanhedrin where Reish Lakish has this idea that a person has made somebody else, is that if a person, that as opposed to birthing them, meaning the first description we had was somebody teach someone else, or as if they birthed them. And then there's another Gemara that says, well, somebody who gave birth to somebody is if they made them. What does it mean that they made them? So because a person is born, if they're born without Torah, they're just people. So they're people, okay? People are out there. But somebody who teaches them Torah, so then they have made them into a new person. The Torah creates new people, so to speak, and that is where the term Asiya comes from. It's not always referred to as Asiya in this Rashi. It's not refers to as Asiya as if they birthed them, but something that's also referred to as Asiya for that reason, as if they have made them new individuals based on the Torah that they learned.
Wow.
Okay. So that's issue number one. So not only that, so the Gemara Bava Metzia goes on to tell tell us. Gemara Bamitzia, and we alluded to this I think a couple of weeks ago in a different halacha day, but the concept that if one then has a choice between doing something for one's father or doing something for one's Rebbe, so the Rebbe takes precedence over the father. That's what the Gemara Bamitzia tells us, that if a person is, if they are have both lost objects, or they have both... I forgot about which one is the must so, but Avedas Aviv of Avedas Rabbo, Avedas Rabbo Kudemis. You may Aviv Shakul Kneged So too, if they're both carrying burdens, so you help the Rebbe's release him from his burden before one releases the father from the burden. So the father actually takes precedence over the Rebbe. The Rebbe takes precedence over the father. That's what the Gemara tells us. Now we'll get to in a moment as to the Rebbe doesn't just mean any Rebbe. Rebbe is referring to Rebbe Muvak, and there's a question one's primary Rebbe. Question whether that applies at all b'zman hazeh. But that at least is the concept. That's brought in the Gemara. That's quoted in Shulchan Aruch. Then Shulchan Aruch, if a father lost something and the Rebbe lost something, so the Rebbe's lost thing is kes kadimus, has first dibs over the father stuff. Now he points out the Havrimaya Aviv Shakel Keneged Rabo, if the father is equal. So then the Rebbe takes precedent, the father would take precedent over the Rebbe. Now it's unclear what the shakul means. The shakul mean that they're both equal in learning?
Or maybe the father also.
Or does it mean that the father had to have taught him? Right.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. But either way, it's interesting, at least in theory, the Rebbe has precedence over the father. If the father is learned, so then that would then up the father's standing and perhaps tilt it if they are equal. Now, there is an exception to that rule, and that is that if they're both taken captive, so then the father has precedence. Right, it says the Rama, v'chein mefarik maso kodom l'rabo, v'afal pi, the Rama, this first of all disagrees, says removing a burden, the father does come first. Aval ein maser v'edas aviv kodom achi hei shakul k'neg rabo, yishom, wait, where? Oh, I'm sorry, the Mechaber quoted it. If they are both in prison, but if the father is a Tamar Chacham, meaning only a little bit equivalent to the Rebbe, not balanced, so then the father would get precedent over the Rebbe. So it's interesting. When it comes to relieving burdens, the Rebbe clearly has the advantage. When it comes to returning a lost object, the Rebbe has precedence over the father. When it comes to releasing him from prison, so then the father would have precedence over the Rebbe. Why should there be any difference? So I took a look in the Beis Yosef here. The Beis Yosef for this halacha is quoted. So the Beis Yosef says, the rush on this, on that Gemara says, Menir delini pidus nafashos, pidu nafashos, when it comes to redeeming a captive, lo be'inan shakulam kamul inyan ha-shavet. You don't require them to be equal. So why should that be? So the time of the milsa, he continues on, I think this is the Beis Yosef speaking himself, the time of the milsa mishum de bepidyon, it's a long line here, the bepidyon shehim besakanis haguf kiven she'aviv talmud chacham, if a father is a bit of a talmud chacham, afi she'inu shakul karabu chayv lahatzil nafsho, you're chayv to save him, mini shachas kodem kol adam aval avida so she'ina ela hefsin mamon imenu shakul karabu im yavur al das aviv ma'at ein ra, that if, because they are not equal, if you kind of push against the father a little bit, no bad has happened. So it's a little difficult to understand what he's saying here, right? It's almost like, by lost object, we're going to give to the Rebbe first. But that's not such a big deal. But when it comes to his life, so then the father is going to have precedence over the Rebbe, assuming he knows how to learn a little bit. They'll understand, a little unclear why he would make that distinction. Either it's the halacha or it's not the halacha. Why is that? I still am unclear on understanding that distinction. But nevertheless, that distinction does hold up la halacha.
Okay.
Yes.
It would seem to me that the father is, we call it, begupas, in the body, something. Anything to do
yeah,
with
let's make a case.
Like
right.
In life, we do that.
Right, but the lost object, like, yes, I hear, but the lost object is not just talking about the they both lost a safer someplace.
Yeah.
It could also be talking about a goof. I thought about that. Oh, well, because saving the person's life from being captive is a bodily thing, and their father is responsible for the body. But the lost object is also probably that. The lost object is not necessarily a safer. It could be his coat. Right? It's not necessarily his tefillin. It could be his video game. Right? We don't know.
That's how we cut the line.
I understand, but if that was the case, Allah would make that distinction. It would say, oh, by ruchnius things, the Rebbe would come first, and by gashmius things, the father would come first. But we don't see that distinction. So I think it's a little hard to just assume that that would be the case. Now, the Beis Yosef continues on and actually says...
I wouldn't just say ruchnius. And then I'm saying, okay, that's true, but I would take another distinction. I'm saying... body, in a sense, is genetically connected, and the other one is learning. They're
so
all
what?
Connections. And learning is kind of like honor. Actually,
but what's the difference? Why by one does he save one first, and by the other one he doesn't?
Because they're put them in the same category. Like giving an object to somebody is a sense of honor. Saving his life, is it your...
I don't know. A guy lost his coat, he wants his coat back. Why is that?
But it's still a sense...
I don't know. I don't hear it.
Prison or death.
Okay, you have to prove it. So
no,
comes the so.
I'm
the,
not saying.
So
I'm
the,
right.
Okay. So the Rambam continues on and says. So there is a statement that the Rambam has. It says, "V'chein by the lost objects." The Rambam paskins. This is an interesting methodological issue in how the Beis Yosef corresponds with the Rishonim on his. You know, in his group. So the Rambam in...
Was he also a Rishon?
No.
Beis Yosef was the borderline between the two. He's where you draw the line. So he's distinct from a Rishon in that he is quoting other Rishonim in a way of like... I'm gonna choose from them. He talks about a library as opposed to Rishonim that learn by way of Mesorah. So that's probably the way of distinguishing between the Beis Yosef and others. So the Beis Yosef, Rav Yosef Karo, so he quoted, he of course passes like the Rambam Rush and Riff, whoever takes 2 out of 3. So he quotes the Rambam. The Rambam in Perek Hey Halacha Aleph says, "V'maya aviv chacham, if the father is a chacham at all, afa pisha'inu shakul keneged rabu, even though he's not the equivalent of the father, mishiv avedus so. You will return his lost object, v'achar kach avedus rabu, and then the rabu." So with regards to this halacha, the Rambam seems to say it's the same thing as what we were describing as saving a captive, right?
Right.
That if the father knows a little bit, even though he's not equal to the Rebbe, so the father wins out. So, first of all, the problem is that seems to go against the Gemara. But beyond the problem of that seeming to go against the Gemara, it also seems to go against another Rambam. The Rambam later on in Hilchos Gezeila Vaveda also has this idea of Pugga Vavedas Rab, if one finds a lost object of the Rebbe, with the lost object of the father, if the father is equal to the Rebbe, so then the Rebbe is going to get precedence. So, and he doesn't include this distinction of, oh, but the father knows how to learn, so then the father will get a little bit. He doesn't include that distinction. So what's going on there? So the Hagos Maimini, who is a commentary on the page of the Rambam, he says, it's a misprint. He says, there must be something wrong with that, with the Rambam in Hilchos Talmud Torah. It goes against the Gemara, it goes against another Rambam, right? And I think the Halacha is like the other Rambam. That's the way that I'm going to paskin against the statement here. He then goes on and quotes, V'chacham echad mibnei banov shel HaRambam. I don't know who it is. One of the Chacham, a Talmud Chacham, who is from the grandchildren, at least, either grandchildren or descendants of the Rambam, suggested the following way of distinguishing by saying, that which he writes in Hilchos Talmud Torah is talking about a Rebbe She'enu Muvak. Right, if it's a Rebbe She'enu Muvak, not your permanent Rebbe, so then the father will get precedence if he has a little bit of if he knows how to learn a little bit. So the Beis Yosef then goes on for about 15 lines trashing this Chacham Echav in Devanav Shel Rambam. The most glaring issue is that at the very end of that parak where the Rambam discusses these things, he says all of what I've recited previously has to do with a Rebbe Mavuk, and if he's a Rebbe Sheinu Mavuk, then the following applies. So that's a pretty strong kasha that the Beis Yosef has on this Chacham Echad. He then goes on and gives one more possibility and says, I think it's his own answer, that which he said, that you could look carefully in Hilchos Talmud Torah, it says, Ra Avedas of Avedas Rabbah, that if you see the lost object of your father and your Rebbe, and Hilchos Gedel Aveda, it says, Pug of Avedas Rabbah im Avedas Aviv, that it says you've come across the lost object of your Rebbe versus the lost object of the father. As if to say in Hilchos Talmud Torah, from it where he sees the father's object before the Rebbe's object. If you see the Rebbe's object before the Rebbe's object, so then, well, like, that also counts a little bit towards helping out, as opposed to in Hilchos Gedel Aveda, when you confronted both at the same time. So that's his suggestion, but then he backs out. He says, I don't really think that's the case. Therefore, I really think that Ghost Maimonides is right. It's just a mistake. It's some kind of printing error that's found within the Rambam. So how does he pass in the Shulchan Aruch? He passes. It's a printing error. Right? So he's not passing like the Rambam. He's passing like what he thinks the Rambam really should say. Right, which is an interesting methodological point. Right, it's a big problem with the Rambam. It's possible. I'm not sure how to say. You know, I looked at the Rambam. It is written in a little bit of a strange way. Often Tosofer, when the answer is, oh, it's a Tosofer, it's one word is wrong, one word is right. There's an extra letter here or there, something like that. This you have to say. There's like a line added, but it looks a little odd the way the Rambam is constructed. About it seems to be maybe there really is a line added. So I think he's justified in saying that it's a Sofer, and therefore that suspect language of the Rambam doesn't make it into the Shulchan Aruch.
So it's not the Rambam, it's a mistake. It's not the real Rambam.
It's not the real Rambam. I mean, we don't know. It's in the Sefer Mishneh Torah,
yeah.
And there's a little bit of a question. There's always a question about manuscripts before, you know, about the how authentic the writing is. It's always an issue that's out there.
You take a lifelong of a guy's poskening. And you can say, when he's one age, he goes one way, and when he's older, he'll change it.
No, first of all, the Mishnah Torah, the Rambam himself wouldn't agree to that. The Rambam himself is writing the Mishnah Torah as a cohesive unit. So it's a seer within the. You could make a case about some things. There are Rabbi Kohn often, Rabbi Sal Kohn in Beth Medrash often likes to point to an example where there's a Gra in Hilchos Tzitzis, I forget the exact topic, where the Rambam says one thing, I think, in Perusha Mishnayis, and then in Mishnah Torah, he changed his mind. And the Vilna Gaon comments that I think he was right the first time. Right? He was right before he decided to change his mind. So he likes to point to that example. So yes, the Rambam certainly from the Perush HaMishnayis to the Mishnah Torah had the right to change his mind. But within the Mishnah Torah, I don't think he would make that.
No.
There's a famous folklore that they say about when Rav Chaim passed away, Rav Chaim Salvechik, who wrote the famous Sefer trying to decipher all these issues with the Rambam. So when he passed away, so Hashem says, "No, you're such a tzaddik during your lifetime. What can I do for you?" He says, I want to talk to the Rambam. I got three questions I wasn't able to resolve. So she finally meets, they say, all right, fine, here's the Rambam. The Rambam says, oh, it's such a pleasure to meet you. I'm so happy about the work that you did developing my ideas. The Rambam says, so I got three questions. First of all, you have this halacha here. I found no source for it. I found you have this halacha here, and it's contradicted by this halacha over here, right? And you have this halacha over here, right? The Gemara doesn't say, it's against the Gemara. The Gemara says, oh, sir, and you wrote that it's mutter. So Rambam told him and says, well, first of all, you say I had no source for it. No, it's a Yishalmi that was lost. You think that I contradicted between here and there. It's not true. What I wrote over there, I wrote, that's not what I wrote over there. It says, us, I really meant mutter. And you say that the Gemara says goes against what I wrote. That's not the text of the wrong Gemara that I had. You're the wrong text of the Gemara. So Rav Chaim slaps him across the face and says, that's no way to answer a Rambam. Right? So Rambam is to try to work out all the etc. So that's what they say in the Yiddish folklore. Okay. So just one other idea with this Kadimas Kavod Rabbo issues here. So point out that this doesn't apply today. The Shulchan Aruch itself points out this would only be by Rebbe Muvak and not by Rebbe She'ena Muvak. So the Shulchan Aruch earlier. Already points out that we don't necessarily have what we refer to as a Rebbe Muvak Bizman Hazeh. Where was it here? Here it is. We don't necessarily have that concept anymore. There it is. That in Sif Lamed it says all these things which we're talking about in terms of honoring one's Rebbe, so that's only by a Rebbe Muvak. The Hainish Rov Chachamas Amanu Menu, which means you wrote, learned most of his wisdom from that person. A Mikra Mikra Mishnah Mishnah Gemara Gemara. The Rama says, Uchayamim Eilu, in these days, Ikar Harabanas Enu Tali Vemi Shalamdo Apilpul Vichilukim Shinoikim Behem Ismanazah, Rakmi Shalamdo Psak Halacha Vein Vemidu Al Emes Vayosher. He says, nowadays most of the Shirim are trying to decipher these pilpul and these questions, things like that. That doesn't make one a Rebbe Muvak. Rather, the one who teaches them a path of psak in halacha, or teaches them halacha. And later, Achronim go on and say that we don't really have that today either, because we don't learn the majority of our knowledge from people. We learn the majority of our knowledge from books. Right? Most of one's time learning in yeshiva is spent learning svarim or learning with a chavrusa. It's not learned. It's not spent in shir. Shir in most yeshivas, you might have shir for an hour to an hour and a half a day. Shaftes shir gave for a very long time. He gave shir for 2 hours a day, which was like unheard of in yeshivas. But it certainly it doesn't compare to the rest of the time that one is really supposed to be spending learning. So therefore, the case is made that nowadays we don't have Rebbe Muvaks anymore. In fact, Shechter records from Rav Salvechik that he used to say that there's a requirement that one is not permitted to paskin halachos lifnei rabba. One is not permitted to paskin shailas in front of their Rebbe. So Rav Salvechik said, nowadays, one Rebbe is not one's physical, personal Rebbe. It is their svarim on the shelf. So one is not allowed to paskin any shailas without first looking it up. So I remember one time discussing this with Rav Shechter and said, you know, who told this, I remember saying it in Shir, and asking him, like, with all due respect, you do that all the time, like, what's going on? So, yeah, I think we try to, like, work out, passing Shilas is not necessarily asking a question about, I don't know, what bracha do we make on a certain cereal, for example, or things like that. So you're not necessarily paskining that shaila. That's I know it's in a book, the following, so therefore it's okay. Paskining a shaila is really a more nuanced idea of when it's not explicitly in the text, and we're going to have to figure out a way of sort of clarifying what category it goes into. That's probably more of what we refer to as paskening shailos of Ismanazah. So that might be the way to resolve that. But the Aruch HaShulchan is famously for saying that Ismanazah, that we don't have this idea of Rebbe Muvak. I meant to bring the Aruch HaShulchan with me, because most of what we learn comes out of Sfarim. But he does allow for the possibility that that if a person really sat by a Rebbe for a very long time and learned a way of hadracha, learned a way of path through life, and a way of learning Torah from that particular person, so they would have, they perhaps could still have the status of a Rebbe Muvak. So he suggests that possibly exists today, and there are others who also make that point. In fact, he quotes here in a footnote in the Pesachim B'Tshuvos from the Maharik that that we do have it even Bizman Hazeh, that Marik is actually quoted in the Beis Yosef, I remember, and he learns from the idea that he says, well, the Rambam talks about Rebbe Muvaks, right? The Rambam lived after the time of the Gemara. So the Rambam talked about it, so why would we not fall into that? Which I might change, you know, with all due, the Marik, I forget when the Marik lived exactly, but he's quoted in the Beis Yosef, which means he lived before or at the birth of the printing press, right? That thing, really, the world has completely changed with the advent of the printing press. Much more is learned out of books than out of Rebbeim, and therefore, even though Rishonim might still have the concept, things might certainly change. I saw one more fascinating Mari Makom.
Now, Achronim is after the printing press. They use.
Correct. Right. There is a... No, the definition is a style of learning, but it just happens to be that's what it happened. I had once somebody, Rabbi Bienenfeld, who's a teacher of Ramaz, I'm not sure where he's teaching now, but he pointed out that every change of Jewish status, historical status of the Rabbanim changed with a technological change, right? From really? Rishonim to Acharonim. I'm not sure where you go from the Gemara to Rishonim. I'm not sure what happened there, but Rishonim to Acharonim. I don't know if he has a claim. But Rishonim to Acharonim changed with the printing press. And then nowadays also it's changed Acharonim to, I think, what you would call Poskim. I'm not sure you would call Rav Moshe Feinstein an Acharon. You really call him a Posek. Or maybe if you would call him an Acharon, he'd be the last of the Acharonim. Nowadays we're more like collectors. So perhaps Rav Moshe, that changed to Rav Moshe with the advent of the telephone. And nowadays with the advent of computers, the style of writing and the style of Sfarim that have come out has really become a very different thing. So anyways, put that aside. But one thought here from the Divrei Yatziv. The Divrei Yatziv was written by the Kloisenberger Rebbe. Kloisenberger Rebbe, that who was many famous stories about the Kloisenberger Rebbe. Rob Eckstein is here, right? He said that his father was American troops that saved him. I remember when we had that discussion, I thought that he had been in Auschwitz, and he said, no, he was elsewhere, but my father is the one who redeemed him. Auschwitz was redeemed by Russians, right? So I actually looked in his biography today and put in real, he was in Auschwitz, but actually got out, was transferred out to do labor. He actually was transferred to clear the Warsaw ghetto. Of debris, and then he was actually sent on two death marches eastward, and ultimately was saved by the American troops and was put in DP camps that was under the American government. So both are right, but he wrote Charles Truva's Divrei Yatziv, where he points out that even those who claim that nowadays we do still have the concept of a Rebbe Muvak, it's only l'chumra, not l'kula. It would only be for the stringencies of kavod to them, but not the leniencies of having honor over one's father. So that concept of the Rebbe Muvak would have kadimus, would come first over the father, that wouldn't apply bisman hazeh. Because even if you want to claim that we do have the concept of Rebbe Muvak, that would only be in terms of honoring the Rebbe, not necessarily in him taking the place of one's father in terms of the hierarchy. And of course, that Shulchan Aruch also has the conclusion of, but the one who pays the bills gets the most kavod, which of course led to the story which I shared when we learned about this a couple weeks ago with the Tvar Torah I was supposed to give when the donor came to Hawaii. We'll check the tape, so we'll talk about it another time. All right. Have a good day, have a good Shabbos, and we'll see you next week.